Action Park Media.
All right, welcome to Victory the Podcast. I'm Doug Ellen.
Kevin Dillon.
Kevin Connolly, still saying our names after 814 episodes, yeah. If people don't
That's
know.
That's what people do. So anyway, yes. There's so much happening at Action Park. We're going to have D.B. Sweeney, a great actor.
Long Island guy.
Hockey guy. And as much as we're going to find out.
I'm going to be non-Long Island guy here.
As much as we're going to find oh, that's right. Sorry.
I'm Westchester, where all the cool kids are.
But D.B. knows you a long time, so as much as we want to find out about
Many
D.B.,
years.
We might get to
I was going to say, we might get a gem or two about Dillon.
I'm sure you will.
Dillon's buddies on here.
But also, I feel pretty good. D.B. had an allergic reaction yesterday. He was shooting something, and you guys were going to record this without me. And today, so was it a reaction, or you didn't want to do it without me?
We really thought we could not.
No, I couldn't wait to do one without you to just really crush one.
Yeah, listen, I said, you know, yesterday I clearly was not at 100%.
Yeah, no,
so I was
not coughing.
It's always great having you, Doug.
Thank you.
We need Doug's our point guard.
He's our Aaron Judge of the.
Well, I don't know about that. It's like he's our Jose Trevino. He's more of a Jose Trevino type.
So major stuff happening at Action Park Media.
All right, you know, yeah, let's talk about that right, first, because so, I want to get to DB's reaction.
So Stocktip, who, you know, we talked about this yesterday. Someone rudely said that Stocktip brings nothing to the table, which is a disgrace. And
he brings an occasional coffee.
He shows up for you, Dylan.
He just started getting it right, though. Usually he forgets the cream or the sugar.
Or he doesn't know the difference between sugar and Splenda.
Okay, but
Dylan does not like Splenda in his coffee.
But Stocktip brought a new I'm more excited about. He brought a new show into the studio, so which is exciting.
Yeah.
But
we realize that we've been leaving money on the table by we have a lot of studio space. We got two studios. And they're not always being used. So let's bring some people in.
Yeah.
Let's make some money.
Okay, but I'm really excited about this because, first of all, and I'm sorry, I don't know her name, but she's from the ghetto of Switzerland.
We're all a little
Sounds like an oxymoron.
Shocked. I had no idea what they're
in. Is that an oxymoron?
I don't know. I don't want to sound ignorant because we sound like stupid Americans. Maybe there are places
in
Switzerland.
It's a small chalet.
You get carjacked on your skis. I have no idea.
I can't imagine it's Compton.
They give you Hershey's chocolate instead of the good stuff.
That's DB, by the way.
That's with
the
DB.
It was not Dillon throwing that. But what I was more excited about, and I may ask her to come on the Ramblon podcast. Mindset is what her podcast is going to be about. And she looked at me for 5 seconds, said, I could fix you in 60 minutes.
Well, like, yeah, no, good luck with that.
It's going to be a 5-part episode for that one.
You couldn't fix him in 60 episode. Days.
I would love it. By the way, I would put in the 60 days. So that's coming.
I would love to see how she would even approach that. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Like, Doug, so take it from the beginning.
Oh, my God. She has no idea what she's
doing. So it started with a movie called Kissing a Fool.
Long before that, my problem started. But we're going to get into DB in a second. But new names, Kevin Dillon, just for me, because I know some of the audience may
Doug's
not
pitching baby names.
I came up with the baby name for your girl, Tess.
I mean, it is a nice name.
It's
I'm
a
not
great
lie.
Name.
It's
I've always
nice
loved name. The name Tess. Tessie, Tessa.
Yeah. I'm just going to play it safe, and I'm not going to comment on names. Because what if you say you hate the name, and then you go with the name? You're on the record. You know what I mean?
That's so the pile of entourage. That came from my friend. Record. Remember when you guys say you don't like his girlfriend?
Wait. The deal was you have to come up with a name, right?
Yeah.
Didn't you say that, Doug?
Yeah, he doesn't follow.
For the next episode, we got to come up with a name. So
now
what
he's
going to
throw something random.
I know. I said it. I like Carter.
By the way, I said it.
Jimmy Carter.
I actually said Carter, and Connolly said that was
well, that was on the list.
On the list for Kennedy. I have a name, but I've already been shut down, and I love it. And Eric Siegel, who's weirdly enough one of my childhood friends, was mentioned on the episode yesterday or last week. He threw it out, and I like it. So,
are we going to say what it is?
I'm going to say what it is.
Lake.
Okay, yeah.
I already lost. Lost. Sarah doesn't like it. Lake Ellen.
I like
silence.
DB likes it.
DB's
like
smart. He's playing it safe.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
I think when you have the second like syllable last better. Name, you go with the single syllable first name.
I agree.
Because you don't want it
call.
To be bop.
By the way, can we introduce DB already? He's sitting right over here.
Let's go. Okay, we're moving on.
Maybe
I'll name the child DB. But anyway, DB Sweeney, I've been a longtime fan.
Long Island legend.
Yeah.
Yes, Long Island
my
legend.
My old buddy, too. We go way back.
You guys have done movies together or no?
No.
Wow. Just 12 packs.
We never worked together.
We never have. It's a travesty.
You know,
and
it's
by movies,
though.
You mean a lot of alcohol. Yeah, that's what they're
What's crazy is we almost did work together when we were shooting in the lot. What lot was that?
Warner's.
That was Warner Brothers, right?
I was doing 2.5 Men. You guys rolled by in the Continental.
And the Lincoln.
Oh, that's right.
And then I was like, yo, DB! And then I brought you in to meet Doug. And Doug's like, all right, we got to figure out how to get you into this episode.
What was the movie? Wasn't it?
Was it the movie?
Yeah, it was the movie.
I think it was the movie.
So oh my god!
By the way, DB, we saved you from being in the bomb.
No, no, no.
I was so flattered that you were just trying to figure out how to shoehorn it in on the fly. That was great.
No, we would have loved
it. Said a lot about the show and everything.
Yeah. So DB's, if you pull up this guy's IMDb, it's a bit jarring. It's startling how often this guy manages to work for as an actor. It's it's impressive. Fire in the Sky. That's a big one that everybody
He's got
knows.
More years than you and me, I believe.
I believe, yeah.
What was it, 83 you started?
I started 83 on Broadway, was my first job. Kane Mutiny Court Martial with Joe Namath and Michael Moriarty.
Damn, you worked with Joe.
How was Joe to work with?
He was awesome. And so I was in the show. We both were replacements, and I came in about 2 weeks before him. So every night at Places, I'd be in the dark with Joe Namath and Michael Moriarty rambling about some conspiracy theory. And Joe Namath would be looking at me like, are you actors all this friggin' nutty? You know, and the answer is yes.
How did you get into acting?
I was a baseball player and I got injured, and it was like I hadn't really done anything else except cook in restaurants. And as a senior in high school, I did a play. It was like that High School Musical thing where they roped in some of the jocks to be in the play. And it was fun, but it was like something you do as a senior. And then when I got hurt, I was like, oh, what am I going to do now? My knee was really messed up, and my dad was a guidance counselor at another high school in Long Island, Ward Melville High School.
It's a rival high school of Patrick Medford.
There it is.
Yes.
And anyway, he said, look, you got to finish college, because if you don't, you'll never go back. So I was at Tulane. I hurt my knee riding a motorcycle. Freshmen weren't allowed to ride motorcycles. So easy to make an example of me, so I was bounced. And then my older sister was at NYU in French literature or something smart. And I just thought, well, I'll just go to NYU, like as if you could just do that. And they said, well, what do you know, as an actor, you had to audition. I said, okay, well, all right, what is that? And so I went and learned a monologue. I took it out of The Catcher in the Rye because Holden Caulfield's older brother's name is DB. And he's a writer who goes to Hollywood and becomes a prostitute writer, basically. So I thought that's
my story.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's you, Doug.
Yeah. DB stands for Doug. That's your middle name, Doug.
So I get through the audition, and it was about a guy talking about his baseball glove, so it wasn't that far away from something I knew. And they let me in, and then I could never get a part. Like, I'd go audition for these, Shakespeare or something, and I was up against all the kids that had been like acting since they were five. You know, the Ben Afflecks and the Matt Damon's that were never on a team, they were just, acting since, the travel acting, whatever, that, the equivalent of that in sports. And so I had no game. I couldn't compete. So for a whole year, I didn't get a part. I went to
whole year? you bastard.
Well, you're
that's
in school.
It's said, like, right? It's a long stretch to go without work.
Not even having a spear carrier.
I haven't worked in like
carrier.
7 years.
I was going to say, Doug's been out of work since the
But if you can't get a part in a college play, the writing might be on the wall.
Oh, you're talking about it.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't talking about like landing like a De Niro film.
What was your big break? Not your big break, but what would you, because, man, you've starred in some big, big movies. So what got you?
It was really Francis Coppola, who I'm actually working with again now in this movie, Megalopolis, after 35 years. Fred Roos, his casting director, who did The Godfather, The Outsiders, he discovered everybody. He met me on this movie called 7 Minutes in Heaven, which was about two young girls discovered Jennifer Connelly. It's her first movie.
Oh, wow. And I saw that. I remember that.
Yeah. So anyway, so Fred brings me in to meet the woman who's directing it and says, it was like three scenes of like a professional baseball player has an affair with one of these girls and it's forbidden fruit, all that stuff. It's crap. But anyway, Fred was like, you got to put DB in it. And the woman wouldn't do it. So Fred tells the story that he was like, I'm going to prove you wrong. This guy's going to be a star. So 3 months later, he brings me in to meet Francis Coppola on Gardens of Stone. And I auditioned. I called back. I auditioned again. And I got it. And so Fred loves to tell that story, how you don't go against him when he tells you who the person is.
Wow, that's wild.
With the great James Caan.
With the God great James Caan.
Great guy.
Yeah. How was working with Francis? Intense?
It was very intense. It was, it was a terrible, tragic situation because his son was killed in a boating accident over the weekend during our filming.
Oh, was that during that?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So, and most of the movie's filmed in Arlington Cemetery, so imagine how somber that whole situation was.
Yeah. It was like a barge, and there was a line, right?
Yeah. Griffin O'Neill was out of control driving the boat. And
going really fast. Didn't see the line connecting the barge with the boat, and they...
Right. Yeah, Griffin saw it at the last second and ducked, and it hit Gio, and he was killed. And
he was the only one killed?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when that
How could
went
I
down.
Not heard that story? That's horrible.
It's terrible. And, so I thought the movie would be over and we'd go home, but, Francis didn't want to go home to Napa and have to deal with, he was like, the show must go on, but like...
It's a good way to...
That's Francis on Apocalypse Now when Martin Sheen had his heart attack. Right. Francis is like, I'll put a stick up his ass and prop him up. Yeah. And we're finishing in this movie. I think he's... I mean, the guy's always put everything on the line for it, and maybe that was a distraction. For
well, that's anyway, what I'm saying. So. At some points when you're in something like that, putting yourself to work might be a good
Good distraction.
Nothing else. Good distraction.
Conley and I used to talk about this after, when did they stop working? When, was it Joaquin?
Doug is a story that Doug, we're on the set one day, and you know, that was when Heath Ledger passed, whatever movie Gyllenhaal was on, they stopped production on that day because Jake didn't want to work. And Doug looks at me, and by the way, I didn't ask him. Doug offers this up to me. He says, listen, Conley, I mean, I don't know. I love you, dude. And dare I say that you and I are closer than Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal, but honestly, I don't know that I would stop shooting if something happened to you. I was like, well, okay. Seeing as how I didn't ask what you would do, but that is good to know. And you know what, Doug? I don't think I'd stop shooting either. I think I'd play through the rest of the day.
Now, we did not have a love scene ever, but if we did,
I mean, it's even tougher if you got to go in and do comedy, you know?
Yeah. That's true. No,
you're in a horrible place, you know?
Everybody's different.
So you would stop working if something happened to Conley? Right?
Well, I actually lost my best friend. I was doing a movie in New Zealand called The Rescue, and I found out my good buddy, Gary Lamont, God bless his soul, he passed, and I wanted to go home. I wanted to, you know, my best buddy passed, and they're like, you can't. You're the lead in this movie. You cannot leave.
Yeah. I mean, you want to be at the funeral, of course, and stuff. But
well, it's also a long way to go to New Zealand, back to New York, but.
DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. It's my go-to in betting on the NFL this holiday season. I love some of the same-game parlays. The payouts are fast. The player prop options. It's great. Right now, new customers can get $5 on any NFL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Check this out right now. Everyone can earn up to a 100% boost with DraftKings stepped-up same-game parlays. These are fun. Go to DraftKings Sportsbook app, place the same-game parlay, and combine multiple bets like which team will win, player props, point totals, and more. The more legs you add, the bigger the boost, the bigger your shot to win big, right? So you can do the Dolphins to the over, but you can also do Dolphins to the over and Tua throwing X amount of touchdowns. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code VICTORYPOD. Place a $5 bet on any NFL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code VICTORYPOD. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Weird transition to hockey. You're a hockey fan growing up. How do you, and you're good at hockey, you skate cutting edge. Tell me about that.
Grew up a Rangers fan, which is an anomaly from us.
Yeah, baby.
From
go
Suffolk
Rangers.
County. I know, So I don't know. I just always loved the Rangers. I loved, you know, John Davidson and Roger Bear and all those guys.
You liked his hair, huh?
Well, you know, he had a pretty good kill sheet, apparently. you go through all the roster of 70s and 80s actresses.
I think Carol Alt.
We were hanging out with Chris Chelios Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
And I had a great time by the beach house, played a little backgammon. And while we were talking to Chris, he got
Chris is one of the great hockey players.
Ty Domi. Do you remember Ty Domi?
I know Ty a little bit, yeah.
He got Ty Domi on a FaceTime. It was like, awesome. Hey, what's up, Ty?
Ty Domi somehow knows Scott Lavin. I have no idea how, but I've hung out with him a couple times.
He was so tough.
The best thing about Saturday
was
Kevin doesn't want to come empty-handed, you know, to we're going to drink some beer at the beach or whatever. So he shows up with some foie gras from France.
You know, like, got to say foie gras.
Foie gras.
Listen, I didn't get any beers, but I got foie gras,
instead of like bringing like a baguette or some fancy crackers, he brings Ritz crackers. It was perfect.
He didn't even know I had the foie gras inside the box. I thought he said, hey, I didn't. I didn't come empty-handed. I show a box of Ritz crackers. He's like, oh my God.
I gotta tell you.
You are such a shanty Irish guy.
This is one of the most bizarre things I've ever heard. Dylan shows up at a tough guy hockey player's party with foie gras and Ritz crackers. I mean,
anybody can walk in with a 12-pack of Coors Light. Not everybody can show up with some foie gras.
Exactly.
I
show up empty-handed, though. Did you just get it? Was it fresh?
I mean,
I had it in my closet, so I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Because I don't stop now. Because I live in Lake Sherwood. There's nothing on the way to Chelios' house. So I had to grab something from the closet. And it was still fresh. It was
in
a can.
It was in the can.
I got it in France when I was in France. Oh, so it's,
that's where he keeps it cool.
It was great. It was truffle foie gras.
It was really good.
Unbelievable. Right? I mean, Phoebe,
it was great. We crushed the whole can.
We did, man.
So it did. The foie gras went.
It was good.
It was like, you know what, Dylan? Thank you, bro. I appreciate the foie gras.
it's illegal in the state. So if you can't even find foie gras, I mean, it's a specialty around here in California.
You are a fucking specialty.
Ridiculous. All right, but let's get back. So how are you good enough at hockey in Suffolk County? You're just an all-around athlete, baseball.
I wasn't a hockey player at all. I just, they came to me on that cutting. I was one of those few times where they're like, we want you to do it, and can you skate? And I was like, no, I can't. And they said, well, we'll give you 3 months. Would you be willing to try to learn? And I said, yeah, sure. So I was living in Manhattan, and Moira Kelly from Lake Ronkonkoma.
She's also great. From Long Island. Yeah. Two Long Islanders.
Tremendous.
I had a crush on her. She
she's
so
amazing. That'd what a good great. Actress. Great yeah. person.
And great
so,
movie.
Oh, yeah. So she's so anyway, they give us 3 months, and MGM rents out Sky Rink, which was on 9th Avenue and like 48th Street. It's on the sixth floor. It's now Chelsea Piers calls it Sky Rink. But yeah, there was an original Sky Rink up in the air. Like you take an elevator up to the rink. It was
oh,
crazy.
Really?
Yeah, and they rented it out. And so it would be the coaches, me and Moira, and she didn't know how to skate either, so we're starting from scratch. So there was a sign, like, and the hockey skates are more comfortable than the figure skates, and I'm breaking them both in. It just sucks. It's, like, really painful, and you don't want to be bad at something as long as I had to be bad at it. So there's a sign up there that says, like, the early morning first hour and a half is figure skating time, and the next hour and a half is open hockey. The sign said, during figure skating time, there's no hockey skates on the ice. So I had my hockey skates on, and Moira goes, hey, you can't have those on. And I was like, and I understood the whole movie. I was like, I'm going to wear my hockey skates every single time.
Oh, so you got that to change that.
So it was like, yeah, I was like, but it irked her. It was like, and so we had a scene in the movie where she wants me to button my shirt. And I'm like, if it meant
yeah, that was great.
You know, so that whole scene, I was like, oh, I get the relationship now.
Wait, they did really, your character not have figure skate? You had hockey?
Yeah, he's a hockey player turned figure skate.
I know that,
right?
But did your character, yeah, so throughout the whole movie?
Well, anytime he saw my feet, it was a lot of times it would be the double. You know, so I was like, when I was skating and little things, and I figured I knew how movies were put together by then. So I practiced really hard on the first step and the last step, like stops. Cause you know, you're going to skate in, stop, talk, or you're going to da 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 da. You go F yourself, skate away.
Right.
So I thought
good did you get? Can you do a triple accent?
Honestly, I'm shocked to hear that this is how it went. I thought for sure he had some kind of background in hockey. Yeah. The fact that you even skated at all, but that makes sense. You skate in, you got to work on your last step and your first step.
Yeah.
So your jump and then your, you know.
Right.
Wow.
And Moira broke her leg in the first week of filming. Doing a lot, landing a jump. That's how good she got.
Wow.
And so they end up leaning on me a little more than they had to.
Broke her leg.
Broke her leg right above the boot. Landing like a single axle jump, which is like, you know, if you're an 11-year-old figure skater, you're doing a single axle.
But
for a grown
still,
woman,
after
3 months,
skated before.
I mean, it was amazing what she had accomplished. So her double, Sharon Carrs, looked exactly like her, you know, from like 80% of angles.
Right. Yep.
So there's scenes like where it's me and Sharon Carrs, and it's like, and if you have a, if you're the dude in the back and the girl in front of you is a pro, you just kind of like lean on her and imitate her steps. And it makes you a lot better.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, it's a dance partner.
Yeah.
Basically, right?
Somebody, they're leading you. So if you just imitate them, and my leg is longer, so I don't have to be as athletic or skilled to imitate her step.
Wow.
It was really fun.
That's crazy.
But you're a good hockey player now, right?
I would say good. I had a period where, you know, at the 10 years after the movie, when I got out there, I could fly around pretty good, but I had no hands. So I just would run into people. And
you were a goon, basically.
Yeah. And you know, Cuba Gooding Jr. is a good buddy of mine.
Good hockey player.
We started playing hockey at the same time. And he's a great athlete. I mean, that guy could dance. He could do everything. And so anyway, we started out around the same time, and we get frustrated because we couldn't really score goals. So we made a deal where we played in these celebrity deals or whatever that you're allowed to drill me and I'm allowed to drill you as long as we have the puck. Open season, just like real hockey. So one time—
To have your moment at the tournament.
So that we could, you know, be doing something.
Right.
Wow.
So at Madison Square Garden during the Christopher Reeve hockey game, it's the greatest hit of all time. Cuba's on the bench giving an interview to— Sam Rosen or somebody. And he goes, oh, DB's out there. I got to go get him. 15,000 people. This interview's on the scoreboard.
He jumps out of the
interview.
DB's
out there. I got to go get him. He jumps over the bench and he skates. I have the puck in the corner. I'm mishandling, I'm sure. And he comes flying in and pancakes me.
Oh,
it's a friggin' yard sale. And it was, but it's a great.
Is that too many men on the ice? Yeah. I mean, you got to get.
Well, no, it was his change. It was his change, legal change. But it was like, it was better than Babe Ruth called shot. I mean, he like.
He flattened you on the scoreboard in the interview.
It was amazing.
And I'm sure they panned over to catch it. Right?
Oh, it was great. I mean,
try to track that down. Maybe cut that into a social clip.
Yeah, that'd be good. It was, I had so much respect for Cuba after that. I mean, I liked him to begin with, but I thought that's just epic.
He's a gamer.
Was this like Bruckheimer's hockey game?
Christopher Reeve had a foundation, and every year they do a charity game at Madison Square Garden to raise money, you know, for paralysis research. And but they would sell the barn out. I mean, it was crazy. You know, Boomer Esiason would be there, and everybody who's like a Ranger fan that had skates would be out
there. But you did Bruckheimer's as well, too, right?
Yeah. We did that for many years. Yeah. We'd go to Vegas and have this crazy tournament.
Did that kind of fizzle out, the Bruckheimer tournament?
Yeah, I think it kind of just kind of came to its like the end of its logical life. We did it for about 15 or 17 years, I think, every year.
Kissing a Fool producers, Todd Mandillo and Andrew Form.
There you go.
There he goes again.
I'm just telling you. They were in that game.
There's connective tissue everywhere.
Connective tissue everywhere. All right, so also, Eight Men Out, right? Tell me that, because, you know, I was at the final call for Eight Men Out.
No.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a job that I was going to get.
That's John Sayles, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, yeah, right. I mean, that's one of my favorite directors. So,
first of all, was that before Fire in the Sky or after?
Before.
Okay, Eight Men Out. So
right.
We're in order.
Eight Men Out was John Sayles, right?
And that's a movie everyone should check out.
And it's about the 1929 White
Black
Sox.
Black Sox, because
they threw the World Series. 1919, excuse me. And they threw the World Series, and it's a great movie. And who else?
I played Shoeless Joe Jackson. Cusack played Buck Weaver. We had David Strathairn, Christopher Lloyd, Studs Terkel, which was a big thrill for me, you know, Chicago writer, and John Sayles was in it. We also had Michael Rooker. It was just a great cast.
You want to know what my line was? Say it ain't so, Joe. I was the same.
Oh, wow.
By the way,
I got robbed. I think I choked.
You would have been better.
I think I choked.
Was that your only line?
No, it was a big moment in the movie where a kid is heartbroken.
You would have been saying that to DB.
I would have been saying that to DB, and I choked on the final call.
You would have been a 16-year-old playing a 9-year-old, right?
What year was that?
88.
88, so I would have been 89? A 14-year-old kid playing a 9-year-old. Yeah. Say it ain't so, Joe. Say it ain't so.
You can still play that part.
What a great movie.
Oh, it was so much fun to be in that movie. I got to tell you Charlie Sheen's story about that movie, right? Yeah. So I did a movie called No Man's Land with Charlie Sheen. And we finished that movie. We had a lot of fun together. And during the filming, Charlie went from like Martin Sheen's kid to like the cover of Time magazine. Like right. It was like the whole ascent, like a rocket ship. And anyway, so he goes off to do, and the reason was because the studio Orion had picked up Platoon. And Mike Medavoy, to his credit, said, this movie's going to be huge. Charlie Sheen's going to be a big star. So he slammed him in the next movie that was filming with Orion, which was this movie with me. So it was me and Charlie. And it was great. We became good friends. He talked about baseball a lot. He goes off to do Wall Street in New York, where I was living. And I'm trying to learn how to hit left-handed because I'm a right-handed hitter. And I thought,
nobody's
ever been a believable baseball player in a movie. And I thought, here's my chance to be the first guy. So I spent 6 months. And John Sayles calls me during that period. And he says, hey, we need a couple more guys. Can you get any of your Hollywood friends who are known? So I meet Charlie at McSorley's Ale House when he's doing Wall Street. And he's got, there's a couple people there. And I said, hey, Charlie, we got to do this baseball movie when you get done with this. It's in Indianapolis. There's no money. But we'll be in the World Series together. I'll be the left fielder. You'll be the center fielder. But I didn't tell him that he was Joe Blow and I was Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Shoeless Joe.
So Charlie never read the script. He shows up in Indianapolis. I see him the first night he gets there. He's got his baseball hat. He's got a dart. He's reading the script. And I walk in.
That's a cigarette, by the way.
Yeah. And he goes, Dave, I'm on page 46. Where's my part? I don't have any lines.
You sound like him, dude.
But he never left. He stayed there and made the movie. It was great. And
Time he didn't read a script.
I mean, did he find some lines in there?
They put a scene in for him.
I feel like I remember.
Yeah, he's a presence. Yeah. He's one of the eight guys, but you know, he's
one of the eight men out, but he had a bigger role than me and a smaller role than DB.
Charlie lives up to his word, though. He does.
He did. I thought I would have probably left if I was him, but he stayed there and, you know, we had a great time.
Now, do you know when you're making that movie that it's going to be what it was? I mean, what had John Sayles done before Eight Men Out?
He was considered like one of the great independent artists,
right?
Writer, directors. Yeah.
Yeah, so. He did Matewan, which was really good.
Yeah, that was Oscar nominated, and he did City of, what the fuck? I love
Return
John
of
Sayles.
The Secaucus 7 was kind of the one that put him on the map, but you know, he was a great writer, and everybody wanted to be in that movie.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. So it was a job to get in a movie to be in.
And the story of the Black Sox is so well known, too. You know that that's going to be very interesting.
And this is before Field of Dreams, I think, right?
It's one of the stupidest thing I've ever done. They asked me to play Shoeless Joe Jackson at Field of Dreams. They actually wore our uniforms from the movie.
So Ray Liotta ended up playing that.
God bless Ray. What a great actor.
Yeah,
I was so stupid. You know, I'd been a college baseball player. I'd been in three movies. Now my fourth movie is going to be my second baseball movie and my second one playing Shoeless Joe Jackson. I'm like, they're only going to think I can play Southern baseball players.
Guys, our favorite food coma holiday is coming up, and you want to be sure you don't mess up that centerpiece turkey. We found the perfect tool to make sure your food comes out perfectly juicy, not that overcooked bird that needs to be drenched in gravy. Dylan often drenches his birds in gravy. Meter is a sleek Bluetooth meat thermometer that keeps an eye on your food and lets you know when it's ready to come out of the oven or off the grill. It'll give you a countdown for the cook so you can keep watching the big game while Meter watches your food. Spend the time with your loved ones. Kick back with your crew. Have a beer and nail that Thanksgiving bird. Super simple, super easy, and perfect results. I can tell you a sad story about my Thanksgiving. 20 people coming over. The bird was horrible. They all left. It was embarrassing, humiliating. That will not happen with the Meter Bluetooth meat thermometer that keeps an eye on your food and lets you know when it's ready to come out of the oven or off the grill. It can be used in a grill, smoker, oven, sous vide, cooking in a fryer, rotisserie, literally anywhere. You can use it in your car if you can get it hot enough. It comes with cloud service. You can have limitless range so you can still monitor the cook while watching TV, running to the store, or playing pickleball. Monitor your turkey, steaks, prime ribs, and chicken in the app so this way you can relax and pretend you're doing a whole lot more. This is perfect cooking tool for your holiday cooking. Get a free pair of heat-proof gloves with any Meter purchase. Go to Meter.com, add the barbecue oven mitts to your Meter purchase, and use Victory at checkout. Thanksgiving is coming up. Cook your meal to perfection and get your free cooking gloves at Meater.com with code VICTORY. Go to Meter.com and add your barbecue oven mitts to your Meter purchase and use code VICTORY at checkout. You know, it's interesting because I know I listened to Costner was talking about, because he just did Bull Durham and Field of Dreams at the same, pretty much at the same time.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he did it for whatever reason. He decided to do two baseball movies at the same time.
But there, you can argue when you do have to think about it for a second.
Yeah, I mean, we're actors. Yeah. We're so stupid. You overthink everything.
You're not, because you might have been right also.
Yeah.
You know, there's that place like, what? It could have been that. Oh, my God. Okay. He's only going to play, you know, left-hitting baseball player.
And DB, tell us, for people that are listening, what's the, in a nutshell, the 1919 story of the Chicago White Sox, a.k.a. the Chicago Black Sox?
Problem is, anytime I do a lot of research as an actor, you always find you get in trouble if what you find goes against what the story is. And so the story of Shoeless Joe Jackson is much more layered and complex than it is in this movie. In the movie, Charles Comiskey, the owner of the White Sox, is a cheapskate. All the players are underpaid. He cheats them out of their bonuses. And they're like the 1927 Yankees. They're one of the greatest teams of all time. So they make a deal with the gamblers. You know what? We're going to make some money by losing World Series games on purpose. And then the gamblers go back on their word. They don't get paid. And then the players try to win. And to enforce the Throne World Series, the gamblers end up threatening the wife of one of the pitchers. So that's basically the story of the movie. Wow. But the real story is that at that period of baseball, Ty Cobb was throwing games. Everybody was throwing games. Like, if you had a four-game series, the first two games would be arranged, and then the last two games would be competitive.
Is that true?
Yeah. It's just.
You got to remember, you know, these guys are winning the World Series Hall of Famers who are going and having jobs in the wintertime because they don't get paid any money, you know? Yeah. And now we go, why would anyone throw a game when they make $100 million to play baseball? But when you're making, you know, less money than some of the people in the stands, you know, that was it was a very different time.
Well, so. It's a problem. Yeah, yeah. It's a problem.
Well, it's kind of like college athletics now. You look at all those point-shaving scandals, and you go, you know what? They should have been, because they couldn't even afford to eat, you know? Yeah. And
well, remember the Super Bowl? Manny Ramirez, the center for Peyton Manning, he obviously got paid. Remember he snapped the ball out of the end zone for the first play of the game?
Against Seattle,
yeah.
Right?
And so the
safety on the first safety play on of the game?
Safety as the first score was like 125-1.
Is that like that's like a conspiracy theory, or they? I mean,
to me, it's pretty much. I'm laying it on the table right now.
I've heard
saying,
far bigger conspiracies. Yeah, that sounds like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
not
easy, right? But nobody ever talked about it.
No one ever accused him, though, right?
No, nobody ever accused him. But
we had a big point shaving scandal at Tulane.
Yeah,
is that
Hot Rod Williams, right?
Hot Rod Williams and my brother's fraternity,
right?
Getting cat hair off you.
Yeah, but that whole thing with that safety was like. Remember that was the year when Peyton Manning was so dominant, and he would always be like, he would use the entire clock. And he'd be like, Omaha, Omaha. And he'd go up and he'd walk up and down the line. Yep. The guy snapped the ball on the first play of the game on the 2-yard line with 18 seconds on the clock.
So you lost a lot of money.
Peyton Manning was nowhere near.
No, I didn't take it that year. I usually take defensive touchdown.
Yeah, this was the Seahawks win with Russell, right?
Yeah.
All right, so I know what you're saying, right? You start digging around, researching your role for the movie of Eight Men Out, and then you go like,
he's not as honest as everyone thought.
No, maybe. I mean, I think that it's just a little more. It wasn't just so black and white.
Because in the movie, Fine. Shoeless Joe won't do it. He's the honest guy.
Yeah. Well, that's Cusack Moore, and then Shoeless Joe is kind of in the gray area. But the reality is,
well, he had a big series. Right?
He had a big series. Everybody says, you know, he had 375. He had 12 hits, which was the record until 1960. Bobby Richardson. Although 1919 is the only World Series that was 5 out of 9 because they didn't have it the year before, so there was so much demand they made it 5 out of 9. Jesus. Anyway, so when you go through, when you really dig into the box scores of where Shoeless Joe got it, he had one home run and he had like just a couple of RBIs. All in blowouts. Like every time he came up in a key situation, he didn't deliver.
Right.
And so 375 sounds impressive, but you know, look at Bernie Williams. He had World Series where he hit 550, and you know, I mean,
he's a good one.
Right. Yeah. Right. Oh, that's interesting. One. So yeah. He was on the take. Probably.
He was on the take.
Wow.
He
was
on, and he should have been. I don't know. I'm
and
with
they're like,
guys.
Shut up. Stop talking about this. You're going to be the honest guy. Yeah.
On a side note,
the
now,
producer
you,
said.
You
that.
See, Yasiel Puig is going to jail for 5 years.
Did you see that? Yasiel Puig,
for what?
800. He made 899 bets confirmed. 899.
Oh my
bets.
God!
He had an illegal gambling thing. And
he's
by the way,
illegal, but he's running an illegal gambling.
And he was probably. I mean, he was making millions and millions of dollars.
It's
and
different
I thought,
than Bobby Nystrom and Clark Gillies making 60 grand a year for the New York Islanders.
Wait, he wasn't doing it while he was playing though. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay, man.
Yeah.
So that's like a
those stories are so
Pete
crazy.
Rose kind of
remember the Ram?
Well, no,
the,
but it's not Pete Rose because it's Pete Rose could change the outcome of the game, you know. Yeah. And then,
no, he was actually I think he was taking bets. Yasiel Puig. He had like a gambling
he's a
ring
bookie.
As opposed to just an addicted gambler or anything right. like that, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think about Pete Rose?
Well, I mean, the Hall of Fame is so complicated. The whole discussion. Shoeless Joe Jackson is one of the five greatest hitters of all time, hands down, in any calculation. And so if it's about what you do on the field, he's got to be in there. Pete Rose, in my opinion, is not one of the greatest players of all time. I think he's one of the most durable players of all time. And he's an accumulator. You know, there's a couple of pitchers in the Hall of Fame with 300 wins who were never the best pitcher in the league. You know, Don Sutton. And, you know, there's a couple of guys in there where you get to certain landmarks. And, of course, 4,400 hits is ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, he's still, nobody's even close. Though,
nobody
right?
will ever get near.
So, I mean, I think that's got to put him as one of the all-time greats, though. No? Yeah. What was his lifetime batting?
275, 276.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he was never. He was a great gamer. He was a great competitor, but you know,
played
but
a long
he
time.
He was tough.
Played
man.
A long time.
He was so
the thing
tough.
I always said about Pete Rose, and here's my look. I think Bonds, Clemens, I think they should all be in the Hall of Fame. The thing about Pete Rose, well, he never bet on his own team to lose. The bottom line is, when you bet that heavy, and then one day you don't bet. The bookies go,
they know
he's not betting because he doesn't think his team is going to win. So let's go against him. He moved the line by not betting.
Right.
So that's where it's
yeah, and you also, you, look, you want to keep the integrity of the sport because, you know, if you got that much money on a game, it may affect you. Whether you think you're going to try
agree.
Harder.
He
you
should
know?
Get in trouble for that, but I don't know if they should still keep him out forever.
There's worse people in these Hall of Fames.
For sure.
Yeah. Pete Rose. And, yeah.
I mean, they should have a rogues gallery. That's what I've always said, is that put the guys that are tainted, Clemens and Barry Bonds and Shoeless Joe and A-Rod
guys
and Palmeiro. And it's just, it'd be the most popular wing of Hall of Fame.
It would be the first wing that I would go with.
The rogues gallery or something.
The dark gallery.
The asterisk.
It's like going to the dark net or something.
By the way,
spent a little time in that dark net.
They're not even talking about the personalities. I mean,
the
there's
web.
Fucking racists and domestic abusers. I mean, I don't know. I think it should be like you just said. Should be on the field and just on a side. We'll end on baseball. Don Mattingly should be in the goddamn Hall of Fame.
Is Don Mattingly not in the Hall of Fame?
He should be.
No, I don't even know.
Hey, but just real quick, though, you got really good. I remember you were telling me you got good as a lefty, right?
Yeah, I discovered that I actually should have been a lefty my whole life because I'm right. You know, guys know how to do dominant eye? Like, so I'm right eye dominant.
Yeah,
you put your... You make a circle and you have both eyes open and you put an object like the coffee cup in the thing and then you close both eyes and the eye that it remains, the object remains in the center. That's your dominant eye.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I never knew that.
I have to try this.
And so if you're a right-hand hitter,
I'm right
you should
eye
be
dominant.
Left eye dominant. Yeah. And if you're, you know, right eye, you know, so it switches because you want your front eye to be your dominant eye.
Maybe I should be a lefty too then.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why you never made the baseball team and had to join band.
Oh, please. I was making movies, dude.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
So you were doing big wheel commercials.
And so then, well, this is the obvious one too. So Fire in the Sky. When does Fire in the Sky come along? This is
like 94.
Yeah. Wow, was that
by the way, I auditioned for that one.
Did you?
I had a couple callbacks as
Dylan
well.
Was close
many,
on...
Many callbacks.
You were close on the many wild movies. Card. Who was the guy that was like sort of the wild, wild
Craig
card?
Sheffer.
Craig Sheffer. Oh, yes.
Yeah. I've done three guy. Movies with Craig. He's yeah. a great guy.
What happened yeah. to Craig Sheffer?
I don't know.
He beat out Dylan and Fire in the Sky. That's for sure.
He did.
Wherever he is, I'm sure it's interesting. He's a good
he's
guy.
An interesting guy.
Yeah, I like Craig.
Yeah.
Fire in the Sky came about in such a stupid way. Again, like I'm an idiot actor. I really wanted to be Spider-Man. And at that time, James Cameron had the rights to Spider-Man. And I knew Industrial wow. Light and Magic did all his effects and everything. So Fire in the Sky came along. They said, hey, this is going to be a really hard shoot. You're going to have to be on wires for like 4 weeks. And I was like, oh, man, maybe James Cameron will hear how good I am on the wires.
This guy is limber. Let's get him in a Spider-Man
as if that's,
suit.
As if that's the amazing. Way they... But that was literally why I got interested.
By the way, it's
why,
not a terrible thought process.
But why did you want to be Spider-Man back then when it didn't... The comic book movies were not like the exciting thing then.
But it was going to be the first one.
It was going to be. That. It was. Everybody was always talking about
this,
someday it'll be...
Toby?
Like, no, but I remember this is like the
10
first,
years before they ever did
the
it.
This is the first time that like you'd heard about it and it was... I mean, think about it. James Cameron and Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's like
it
was
totally changed.
Toby was the first Spider-Man.
Toby
right?
was the first Spider-Man, okay. But there was Cameron was kicking it around in yeah. the early yeah. 90s. Right.
So this is how, like, if you're from Long Island, you think the best way to get a movie is to impress the technicians with the wires
right.
instead of like having dinner with Jerry Bruckheimer or something.
right,
you know,
right.
like, I mean, you know. So anyway, that's my story. Stick
so what
it.
Did you do? You
fire
got
in the sky.
You hooked up the wires and started.
Yeah, no. I just knew that was going to be a bit like that. There's an 11 yeah. minute sequence in that movie that took us 4 weeks to shoot, and I was on the wires 12 hours a day. Like I did every single shot in that sequence, and it was really fun, but it was hard work. I mean, because. They did something so smart, which makes it where you can't really tell that it's fake. They built the set upside down, and then they turned the camera upside down, and then they hung me from the ceiling. So you couldn't really tell. Usually when somebody's flying around, it's like, ah, yeah, he's got wires on his hips. You know,
yeah,
you couldn't really detect it as well.
So and everybody knows we're talking about Fire in the Sky, which is the Travis Walton, who is, it's one of the most credible UFO abduction cases.
You were being beamed up to the... to the flying saucer or whatever at that stage, right?
Yeah, the flying saucer. Like, you know, they have like this medical research facility on the mothership or something, and they do experiments on humans. That's the premise of the movie.
Did you get probed? A little anal probe?
Dylan,
by the way, there's no episode that we've done out of 200 that Dylan doesn't hit
Why
anal probe.
Why are aliens
somewhere?
Such pervs?
People are going to be waiting for it.
Everyone who gets abducted always Dylan, gets like an alien
Dylan
probe.
Dylan refused to read when he realized that he wasn't really going to get anal probe.
I'm
he
out.
He likes to do he likes to do it practical.
I need to be probed.
I got a couple of questions about this, because we did an episode of Entourage where with Vince, you know, where he was doing Aquaman, had to get on the wires. So is it, when you say it was fun, is it fun being on wires for 4 weeks and trying to act?
No. It's really hard
no
work.
Way.
It's really hard work. But you know, if you know it's going to be cool, you get through it. But it was like, it was definitely, I was sore. I had my hips for like a year were never the same, because you had to arch your back and all the weight of your body is right through your hips.
And so. Also, aside from that, I mean, is acting, do you feel like you're really able to perform at your best, or are you kind of like, does this look good, or I got to trust everybody?
Well, this is just one sequence where he's getting beamed up.
Yeah,
right?
It's 11 minutes of the movie.
No, it's right. 11 minutes of weightlessness. So so the whole thing took 4 weeks, you know, 5 days a week, and
4 weeks to shoot that sequence.
Yeah. I'm gonna
those
watch
are the
tonight.
Days, bro. Those days
who
are
directed
over.
The movie.
Yeah, Rob Lieberman did a great job, and but it was, you know, they didn't have enough money for the rest of the movie because like you know,
spent it all on the wire.
Spent it all on this 11 minutes, you know, and they could have used another few million for that. But Peter Berg was in the movie, and Robert Patrick and James Garner. So
I mean, it's
was,
a great movie.
It was
and I
a
think,
real lot
I think
of fun.
I also think it holds up, and it's an incredible story. But just because you guys are smarter than me, so the shot
you got
is,
that right.
The shot, they turn the setups. Explain
they,
that to
they
me.
They build the set upside down.
So like the spaceship.
The spaceship is built upside down.
Upside down. So the spaceship's on the floor.
Yeah. Well, the roof of the spaceship is on the floor.
Okay.
And then the bottom on the top, and then they turn the camera upside down. But the wires that are hanging me up are still from the ceiling, and then they hang me up facing my face to the ceiling.
Okay.
So it just disorients your sense
I'm
of where
they're disoriented right now. I'm
yeah.
still trying to figure it out, but that's smarter than me.
Dylan's
right?
still thinking about anal probes. So
because
you know,
oh, yeah.
there's the famous story from Close Encounters. Spielberg took the picture off of Mulholland of the Valley, and flip the photo upside down, and that became the bottom of the ship for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So
yeah.
Nowadays, they would just go, they would just do it a totally different way. Yeah, yeah, that
Connolly
is true.
Connolly comes out with a lot of things.
These guys don't believe me.
But some of them are wrong. He said Al Pacino was in
Dustin
Star
Hoffman
Wars.
Was in Star Wars.
No, he wasn't.
But Kevin, I got to tell you, if you do get abducted, the aliens have this mint lube that's unbelievable.
Oh, nice.
You're going to like it.
I mean, they're traveling so many light, millions of light years just to anally probe me. It's a long way to go. You must really want it bad.
Okay, so I've had very limited use with CBD and CBD oils. I mean, I've tried it before. I obviously broke my leg many years ago, and it's an injury that still kind of bothers me a little bit. And I've tried to rub CBD oil on it. And truth be told, I don't know. I never was sure if it helped, if it wasn't helping. I really didn't know. Well, if you've ever wondered if your CBD was working, that means it probably wasn't. NextEvo Naturals developed Smart Sorb technology, clinically proven to help your body absorb CBD four times better than regular CBD oil, because oil just doesn't mix with your water-based body. It works faster too. When you feel the stress coming on, you won't waste time wondering, is this working? So recently in the office, we've all been on a bit of a health kick here. We're all walking, trying to get our steps in, sharing our stats. So I've been trying to do 20, 25,000 steps a day, which is a lot. And truthfully, at my age, I'm starting to feel the aches and pains. So after a long day of walking and working and getting my steps in and just living life, I have turned to NextEvo Naturals, the CBD. It relaxes me and it helps the aches and pains feel a little bit better. The Smart Sorb technology improves CBD's ability to be absorbed and getting it into your system in as little as 10 minutes. Help fight the stress with Nevo Natural Stress CBD Complex with ashwagandha, clinically proven to reduce stress by 70%. NextEvo is the only brand that combines a patented natural whole plant ashwagandha that's 8 times more powerful than regular ashwagandha, and their 100% U.S. hemp-derived Smart Sorb CBD with 4 times better absorption than standard CBD. Get to the root of the stress with the Stress CBD Complex from NextEvo Naturals. For up to 25% off subscription orders of $40 or more, use promo code VICTORY at NextEvo.com. That's NextEvo.com. Promo code VICTORY. DB, did you meet Travis Walton? Of course you did, right?
I did, yeah. But after my experience on 8 Men Out and also on Memphis Belle, I played a kind of a real life person. The crew of the Memphis Belle was a real thing, but they changed all the names. And I played the Navigator, and he's kind of a coward in the movie. But in real life, he was the most heroic guy in the crew. So his family lost their mind when they read the script. They were like, nobody's going to get the distinction of, you know, the fictional versus the real. It's like, this guy was like, I don't think he won a Bronze Star, but he was a decorated guy. And the family was like, the legacy will be ruined. And I was like, and I got drawn into the middle of that. I was like, I'm just reading the script here. You know, don't blame me. So 2 years, 3 years later, I did Fire in the Sky. I was like, I really would rather not meet Travis Walton in case I don't believe him.
Yeah. Well, do you believe him? Do you believe him?
Connolly
clearly does. But.
The most incredible thing about that story is there was, in the movie, there's 5 guys in the pickup truck who witness it. In the real account, there's 6 guys in the pickup truck, and they're not like fraternity brothers. They're just coworkers, and all 6 guys say it happened. So that's, you know, and they all 6 passed lie detector tests, which doesn't really prove anything.
Well,
but it helps. I mean, it's the fact that none of them have recanted. It's 50 years ago.
Connolly, you're a believer.
The point is exactly what DB is saying, is that these guys had nothing to gain, and they were under heavy scrutiny for this ridiculous story that their friend got kidnapped by a spaceship. The guy's gone for 5 days, and then he pops up alive. And then these guys were either all in on it together and are the best actors ever, or something weird happened that day. Now, I don't know. You know, it's funny. Did you listen to Joe Rogan?
I do, yeah.
Did you hear Travis Walton on Joe Rogan?
I did. I heard that episode.
Travis Walton said something interesting, and it's true. He said, when you tell a story long enough, 35, 40 years, however long he's been telling the story, eventually you're telling the story. If does that make any sense?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's like, yeah, at this point, it's so sketched into my memory that I'm almost telling the story out of memory of telling the story than out of my memory of what actually happened, if that makes any sense.
I thought that was interesting, but still. I don't believe it.
Well, what do you think? You just think.
I don't really have the hypothesis of what he actually did.
I mean, did you ever look into it?
There's nothing for me to look into.
Maybe something weird happened. Maybe it was a government thing.
The cops said LSD. That's what the cops said.
I didn't even know that. Yeah. And I said, that's what I said.
Yeah. 1975, a lot of LSD floating around.
I've got a lot of friends that I've seen on acid think they've been abducted.
These guys were like big tree loggers.
I'm just saying, no evidence.
They were doing acid,
no
chainsaws.
They got
cameras.
They got probed, that's for sure.
I know, but everybody's got a camera now, and we never get any real.
Well, there's a lot of evidence now. You know, speaking of Rogan, did you hear David Frank? Fravor, the Navy pilot. They were talking about that. There's all kinds of documented information now of unidentified aerial phenomenon, I think they call it now. Yeah. And so it's getting harder and harder to say it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
I think Doug's point, and hate to say, he's kind of right. It's like every time you see these videos, it's like a black and white radar video. Yeah, yeah. Like, where's the iPhone 14 fucking video shot? Yeah. There's got to be some high end video. It's just stuff.
If someone travels that far to not about the probing, but wouldn't they want to? Like, well, why would they come here and not like introduce themselves or just?
Rude.
We come from another planet.
Listen, but why is it always a farmer? Like, why don't they grab like Emily Ratajkowski or something? I mean,
because Matt Gaetz already got her. I mean, look, you could go so deep into what another form of life could be, could not be. Our comprehension can't even comprehend it. But still, my point is, if you said to me, I will give you $1 million if you can prove that Kevin Dillon likes to be anally probed, I would get it on camera within a month.
I'll take half that money.
Let's split it.
Let's do the probing right here in the studio.
I'll probe you live on the Victory podcast right now for that kind of money.
Ew.
Dillon,
I'll probe you live.
I smell a pay-per-view event.
what a weird thing Dillon say. Like, why wouldn't they introduce themselves? Why would you drive galaxy?
You would go for either they'd want to take our world or they'd want something from us, water,
oxygen,
whatever.
You're assuming, though, that they are some form of life that has any relation to us. Again, I can't even come up with
it. Or they would want to study us.
But it's like religion to try to come up with, like, how did all of this happen? You know,
why would they be there? They'd have to be there. Look, maybe they're home. They're looking for a new home.
We know hundreds of movies.
They're not looking for a home. That's our technology.
Did you guys ever get the sea monkeys from the comic book when you were kids? The little shrimp? Sea monkeys.
Brian Shrimp.
Yeah, maybe you grow them, you mean?
But maybe we're the sea monkeys to the aliens. Like they got a little aquarium.
What does he say? Like, Animal House.
We might be like little ants.
They're just looking at it like a hobby.
In Animal House, Tom Hulce. What if we're just like a little universe inside the thumbnail of some great big creature in some other universe?
I believe
like Horton's Herd of Who or something.
I believe that it's our technology.
What is
the phenomenon?
Yes,
that you
of
see,
course it is.
I think it's now.
Being said, I do believe there's life somewhere. I don't know what the hell it is.
Oh, I agree, 100%. There's life in the universe.
Yeah, but I just don't think
one of these days.
And I believe there's intelligent life as well. I just don't think they're going to come all over here for probing. I don't know. I mean.
All right, let's get back to
All right, here we go.
So now you're working again with Coppola. And this is a great story about Coppola. So after kicking around, he's like, you know what? I'm going to go back to what I did. I'm going to make my movie with my own money, like raised it, and he's doing it all on his own, correct?
Yeah, nobody knows for sure, but the rumor is he's spending like $100 million or more of his own money to make this film Megalopolis. He's had the script for 30 years. And it's like, it's not like Fast and Furious or anything like that. It's kind of an art movie. It's like a meditation on cities and the nature of society and civilization. I mean, it's Adam Driver's in it and John Voight and Dustin Hoffman and Forrest Whitaker. I mean, it's an unbelievable cast and it's so ambitious. And like, he showed me the sketches and it looks like The Conformist, you know, the famous Storaro movie meets Avatar. Like, it's amazing vision of like the near future and coupled with like the coolest parts of the past, like, you know, like he has elements of great design from like the last 30 years, but he also has these things that he's imagined in the near future. So he calls the setting of the movie Modern Times. So there can be a payphone booth on the street and also a cell phone the size of a diamond ring in the same universe. And he's just got his own thing. It's amazing.
That's wild. So and who are you playing in this and who else is in it?
I play the police commissioner of New York. We have Natalie Emmanuel from Game of Thrones and Fast and Furious and Aubrey Plaza, Shia LaBeouf.
Aubrey Plaza is amazing on White Lotus. Have you been watching White Lotus?
I got to catch up on that one. I got to see it. I hear it's great. Yeah. But she's tremendous. We had a week of rehearsal together, and she's so talented. And it's just a great, great bunch. And I think John Voight is one of the great actors.
He's unreal. Legend.
Ray Donovan, to me, is like a clinic. So, and those two guys, Dustin Hoffman and John Voight, haven't been together since Midnight Cowboy.
Is that true? So, do they have scenes together?
Wow. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
So it's pretty great.
I'm walking over here.
Jesus Christ. I hate when you do your movie impression. And how far into the process is it? Are you rehearsing?
Week two. We shot last week, and then I'm not on this week. So, that's why I got to be out here. And
what happened yesterday? Was that from shooting?
He's doing another show. This guy's got more jobs in 1 week, Doug, than you and I have had in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I got brought in on Call Me Cat. I worked with this great, this is actually a great story. I'll tell you this real quick. Jim Patterson was my, brought me in on Two and a Half Men. And so our sons played hockey together, you know, like 13, 14 years ago, and they were on the Junior Kings in El Segundo. So hockey parents are crazy to begin with. The best thing you can do as a hockey parent is to get away from the other parents and go find a private spot to watch. Right. So I'd always go by the Zamboni door and just watch. And this other dude was there, Jim Patterson. He had a Michigan shirt. And, you know, El Segundo's not really Hollywood. It's like there's Toyota there. There's Northrop Grumman. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of possibility for normal people around there. So anyway, I figured he's like one of these guys. So I start talking to him, shooting the shit. And he go, and he knew I was an actor, but it wasn't like a thing. And so one day he goes, wow, you're really funny. Have you ever thought of doing a sitcom? And I was like, oh, no, I hate this. Now he's going to pitch me some shit or whatever. You know, and he goes, because I'm one of the writers on Two and a Half Men, and maybe you'd come do an episode. And now I thought, okay, this is one of those things that gets said to you 15 times a day in L.A. that means nothing.
Right.
And so 3 months later, I moved my family to Chicago for my son's hockey and for our life and for other reasons. I get a call from Jim. And he goes, hey, DB, it's Jim Patterson. I just got promoted. I'm the head writer on Two and a Half Men. You want to come in and do an episode?
Now I can make that happen.
And I was like, okay. So I flew in. We did one episode. And John Cryer and I had done a play together back in the day in New York. And we kind of clicked. The director was Jamie Widows, who was in that play, The Caine Mutiny, that I did. So I had some, some.
And Charlie, obviously. And,
no, right? Charlie was gone by now. Okay. So this is the Ashton Kutcher days.
All right, we'll edit that out. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. but it was, you know, so John Cryer and I had an immediate thing. And so it turned into like 11 episodes. So then last year, there's this show I did called Be Positive. And Jim Patterson again called me up and said, hey, you want to come in and try this out? And, you know, it's kind of like a paid audition to do an episode. And that turned into 11 episodes. And then the show got canceled. So tragically, on Call Me Cat, they lost a very beloved actor. You know, Leslie died a few weeks ago. And so it was, they're trying to figure out where the show goes, you know, me and a couple other pieces to see what, you know, makes the most sense. So and it was great. I just, you know, but anyway, so I go to the makeup room, and this goes back to my theory of like makeup trailer is where all movies go to die. And you know, it's nothing.
Doug's going to love this.
Nothing good happens there. So when I directed my movie, Two Tickets to Paradise, the first thing I did was in the budget was I crossed out the makeup trailer. And I said, we're going to have no, because that's where everybody goes to say how much the director sucks. Yep. So I thought, you got to say it to my face now. We're going to do, so I had the makeup artist go to the actor's two banger and do their makeup there, because I just wanted to quell every conspiracy in the cradle. So anyway, so I go to the makeup trailer yesterday, lovely people. And, you know, they always go by what number you are on the call sheet. And so I'm a guest star, some number, whatever, 12 or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It's just, but there's like a pecking order.
Right.
And I've always felt like in the makeup trailer, take care of the guy who's the most banged up with the best person, right? So, they bring in the girl, the main character. She's like a shiny dime. She doesn't need any makeup. You know, I mean, she, you know, give her a little powder and
work. She's
on
good
the,
to go.
Work
right?
on the older lady, you know, work on the, you know, but it's always like, you know, they, and there's a lot of qualified, talented people. Anyway, I had a bad reaction with the makeup and I was sort of like, well, you know, here we go. I could have done with no makeup at all. And, you know, who cares? That's not where they're hiring me.
Right.
So, but my face, I turned into a lobster. So now they got to cover it, because you can see the residual today. I'm still a little red. So now they take out the friggin' spackle and they're covering me.
So DB came in yesterday. We were going to record yesterday and he had just had this reaction to it. So this morning I said to Dylan, like, yo, whatever happened. So yesterday you came in, you were putting aloe on. Did they end up putting?
Well, then I went to the Warner Brothers Infirmary, which of course is where all the world's greatest skin experts are. and they gave me some like cortisone cream or something. And it actually worked a little bit. I was putting ice on it. And it was just funny. It was like, I got hurt once on a movie 30 years ago, and the producer was like, came to the emergency room and he's like, he's acting like he was concerned. But then he finally said, are you going to be able to film tomorrow? And it was like, you know, he like let down that he really didn't give a fuck about me.
The holidays are here. Achieve gifting greatness when you give the gift of perfectly aged, tender, and delicious Omaha steaks. The steak experts at Omaha Steak have put together curated gift packages to help take the guesswork out of gifting and make you a holiday hero. OmahaSteaks.com and use code VICTORY at checkout. Get $30 off your order. Send an assortment of mouth-watering favorites guaranteed to impress, like the legendary Butcher's Cut Filet Mignon, air-chilled boneless chicken, ultra-juicy burgers, and even easy-to-prepare comfort meals that are ready in a flash. Omaha Steaks is ready to ship your order right away, so shop early and beat the shopping rush. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code VICTORY at checkout. Omaha Steaks equals the world's best beef. Naturally aged for the ultimate in tenderness, juiciness, and flavor, Omaha Steaks has everything you need to deliver an unforgettable holiday gift experience. Five generations of family-owned expertise means uncompromising quality that you can trust. Every steak and every entree is flash frozen, vacuum sealed, and ready to share with your family. Omaha Steaks is a gift from the heart, a gift that will be remembered with every unforgettable bite. Order with complete confidence today, knowing you're ordering the very best. Visit omahasteaks.com. Use promo code VICTORY at checkout to get that extra $30 off your order.
So yesterday, you know, the producer, like Jim is my buddy, and the other producers were so sweet and everything, but you could tell they were sort of like, is he going to force us to come back and film tomorrow? And I was like, there's no way. We're shooting this, even if I have a bag over my head. I mean, right. So
I said, DB, you got to get out in front of this one, bro. This didn't happen at the nightclub. This happened on their set. Just call him and tell him he had a reaction to it. So it worked out. It worked out last night.
Yeah, we shot. But it was funny. I looked at my face in the mirror and I was like, there's no way I don't look like a guy with 4 inches of makeup on. I mean, it was just, I felt like I'd taken like a plaster of Paris and going, they said it was all right. And
did they use like green? As a base, because if you want to get rid of red, you start with green as a base.
Dylan knows his makeup. I love it.
Well, he's a painter.
They did do something like that.
And then you, after the green, then you put the makeup on top.
Yeah, but then they told me they're going to go in and in post-production and digitally do something, which sounds to me like, you know, we've always said we'll fix it in post. It's never true.
They never do that. Yeah. But is that, say that again, Kev. So if it's red, you put green on it?
Yes.
And that'll neutralize?
Green will neutralize the red.
You know, there's a painting,
I've had kind of like
a guy went golfing on Sunday.
Yeah, I'd come back, I'd be all red, and to take the red down, they would use green.
By the way, there's no way the aliens would not want to talk to you. There's just no way.
I want
to probe. They don't even talk to me. They go straight for the probe.
I want
to
probe you after that little
stat. Conversation.
That's great.
If I'm an alien, I'm grabbing Dylan too.
You guys are going for the probe right away.
I think that's a really interesting thing. Of course, Dylan
always has.
Well, Dylan knows the tricks of the trade. Yeah, I got toasted. I'm burnt on the golf course.
Yeah.
And they're going to put a little green makeup on me.
So bad for years. I just burned my face. I mean, DB's a golfer too. And Kev, you're just now golfing, but I mean, you never use sunblock. Only now over the last couple of years have I started doing it. But you're out in the sun all day long.
Not for me. I tee off at 6:45.
7 hours.
So
7 hours in the sun. There's no shade.
I feel like this should be written down right. This is Johnny Drama coaching a makeup artist.
Absolutely.
Scene, right? I mean, it's amazing. It's like,
Dylan,
I love that you know that.
Not worry about sunblock at all. Oh, they'll put some green on my face.
Yeah, a little green.
Dylan knows his. It's amazing when Dylan is in there instructing the makeup artist.
It's good
to know.
A film can be affected. And I was saying before we got on the air, because you tell me about the reaction, but David Schwimmer was shooting this Ivan Reitman movie, 6 Days, 7 Nights. And his girlfriend at the time came to my house, played with my cat for a second, and we went over to the set, which was in Beverly Hills. Chapman, Oscar winning.
It's Harrison Ford, right?
Harrison Ford.
Ellen's.
Anne Heche.
Ellen's old.
Late Anne Heche. Yeah. And, Michael Chapman, you know, cinematographer of, I believe, Raging Bull. Oscar winner. And she goes over, she just kisses David hello, and then like, I'm standing behind the camera. There's like 300 people there. It's probably at the time like 75 million.
I mean, it was a massive movie.
And all of a sudden, I hear like Michael Chapman going, "What's wrong with his face?" And David's face within like 2 minutes of saying hello to her who kissed a cat
an hour
earlier.
Wow.
My cat.
Wow.
All of a sudden, his entire face blew up, and they had to shut the whole thing down. And when you're in, which we just did, an independent pilot, like, if things get shut down like that, you're fucked.
Can't recover.
Know? I mean, obviously, Harrison Ford, they can recover. But you know.
Yeah, listen, I don't want to get into we just have beat this story to death. But when we did the Entourage movie, we got this crazy location in Palo Alto. Where was that?
Palo Alto.
Palo Alto. And it was 4 days at this one location. And like 60 people flew in for cameos. And I broke my leg at 10:30 in the morning on day one. And as I'm laying there, I said, we are not shutting. I didn't have to talk to Doug or the producers. I'm like, I just have to figure out a way to get through this.
Yeah,
we're not coming back to shoot this. It's too late. The ship has sailed.
I've never seen so many trailers. I mean, there was like 20 trailers, and they were all double bangers. How many guests we had.
It's funny, we had a
big party.
I was so jealous when you guys were shooting that show. I wanted to be on that show so bad.
We would have had you on. Dylan should have called.
I did. I tried to.
You muttering, stuttering. But I mean, you know, that day, it's funny because last week we had a charity guy here who won a charity. He wanted to come see the the podcast, and he was talking about that scene, and he was like, how did you put all of that together? And it's funny because we have such a great crew. I'm like, I didn't really do much. Gronkowski just showed up, said, can I be in it? And but it was a massive day.
I knew. I was like, fuck, man. This is like, I can't even like complain my way out of this one. I'm like, I didn't need to talk to anybody because
so
knew
in that
I
scene,
to...
they just had you sit somewhere?
No.
He still had to walk.
No, I was walking around.
No, Gronkowski, wanted to shoot him up with some Tardo.
Nah.
Swear to God.
JB, I knew he couldn't walk hardly, so I put my arm around him, and we're doing a walk and talk. I'm basically like carrying him along.
By the way, I had to make it about, I don't know, probably from, I'd say 3 or 4 feet.
It was longer than that.
But there was this one point where I was just exposed as a guy. They're like, cut. I'm like, what? Like, it looks like you're limping. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure my leg is broken. I'm definitely limping. But you can, and by the way, I'll pull up the shot one day. You can see it if you look close. Dylan, who likes to, you know, basically try to probe me, but Dylan reached under and he hooked.
Reached
my,
under?
Wow, this
Dylan,
is good.
Dylan
it's a reach around.
Out.
It's a reach
Dylan
around.
Dylan grabbed me by my belt and wedgie and he carried me to my mark.
You want to see a public assault that is in the Entourage right. movie. But
Dylan probed me on film. How many people can say
we had this in the cutting edge with Moira when she broke her leg. And actually, one solution was genius. It made the scene better. Like, we go back to the hotel and she's hammered, but she couldn't walk. She had a boot, a cast on her foot. So they had me carry her piggyback and they put a massive fur coat on her because it's kind of silhouette. So it took your eye away from the cast.
Yeah.
It was genius. And it actually made the scene better because she's so hammered, she can't even walk. And then she comes onto my character and it's like, and he's like, I don't want to do this. You know, you kind of get it.
You know, it's amazing. You have no options but to come up with something.
This is funny. This comes full circle because before we came on, we talked about, I don't know if we've been chatting, but when we were shooting the movie and we were rolling through the Warner Brothers lot in the Lincoln, we were rolling through in the Lincoln because my leg was broken. We were supposed to be walking. My leg was broken, Doug was like, why don't we just put him in the car and have the Lincoln rolling through the soundstage? So that's the only reason why the Lincoln was even there.
Can't get too much of that car, though. That car.
Well, it's funny. Not that it wasn't a happy accident for me, but it actually aesthetically was awesome to see the Lincoln rolling through because it wasn't there.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I mean, lots of times things like that happen and you come up with solutions. But I remember, you know, it's tough. I mean, first of all, he's one of my close friends, but I remember going, he could permanently damage his leg.
Well,
and
at the
same time, you're right. We were not coming back. There was no way.
Where's that car now? Who's got it?
Dylan was trying to buy it.
You know what? I should have bought that car when I could have. I didn't have to buy that. With the guy, we were renting it from this guy, and now the guy's trying to sell it for like $1 million or whatever.
Do you know that Dylan said to me, you know what? After season one, Dylan was like, you know what? If we come back, I'm going to buy that car, and I'm going to rent it to production.
Yes.
To which I responded, that's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life. That would have been...
It would have been the greatest.
And not only that, it would have been just better if it was yours.
And I would have kept it in better shape. That thing had no brakes. The steering was off. It would overheat. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Finally, that guy put some money into it.
So you didn't have a backup one standing by?
Nope.
That was it.
That's amazing.
That was it. At one stage, I had the whole crew. I thought you might have been in there in the back. And when I was driving to Vegas, doing the Vegas bit, and I'm supposed to be drunk. I'm drinking Jack Daniels and driving.
Cut the drinking and driving.
Did we cut that?
Oh, but there's no you swigging the
bottle. I'm like crying and I'm singing some song. I forget what song it was, but
So on the last,
and I'm going, I can't see anything with the lights. I can't see the road. The brakes don't work. The steering's all over the place. I got guys hanging out of the Lincoln. I mean, it was like so dangerous.
Oh, you know what, though? If I had to go with one guy behind the wheel of that Lincoln,
it's Dylan.
No questions. Dylan is the game one starter for driving the car.
For sure.
But this is funny. And I'll say it because he ended up signing it, I believe. But the last day of shooting of the show, we're in the hangar in Van Nuys. Doug, I mean, come on, 200 people. It, by the way, it's like doing live television. By the way, it was like doing it in front of it was like a sitcom. There were so many people there to watch us shooting this last scene. And Dylan had befriended the guy that owns the Lincoln.
Yeah.
And Dylan comes over and he's like, yo, this guy wants everybody to sign the glove box and sign the... Now, right away, you go like, man, that jacks the price. You know what you're doing to it. And I'm going like, well, who gives... Well, all right, who gives a fuck? What am I going
to
do? Ask him for a free
ride? I
mean,
I was like, yeah, the guy was all right to us.
Dylan comes up and is like, hey, guys.
So. I got him to do the inside. I think it was the inside of the glove box.
Which is a way better idea.
I was like, you do not want it right out here in front.
No, on the seats or something.
So you open up the glove box.
And there it is. And it'll protect the signatures as well.
And I believe Piven was the lone holdout.
Piven did not want to do it.
He didn't want to do it for the first instant.
And I think he may have done it.
He did it. But I think Jerry and I immediately were like, and Adrian's like, well... Adrian finally is like, all right, Adrian.
But then again, you know, his character never really spent any time in that Lincoln anyway. So,
yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah,
it's good
great
for
the
value.
Car,
but I think,
no doubt.
You know, Piven was like the last minute holdout.
Did
and
he sign?
Finally, yeah, he finally, I guess it's what's the upside? There's no.
God forbid the Lincoln guy makes an extra 10 grand when he sells the car.
That,
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that was
Dylan said, Jeremy, either your fucking signature or your brains are going to be on that contract.
I'm happy to welcome an amazing new sponsor to the show, and I'm talking about Sheath Underwear. Have you or your friends had trouble finding comfortable underwear? Underwear that is focused on your comfort with no chafing, no sticking, no drama, and designed so that everything fits exactly where it should. And you know what I'm talking about. If yes, then you have to try Sheath Underwear. It all starts with Sheath's dual pouch system, a concept that was developed by the company's founder after enduring a summer in Iraq, day after day of triple digit heat and unbearable chafing and discomfort. Founder and CEO Robert Patton felt there had to be a better way, and now there is. When I first saw it, I thought, this is genius. My friends tell me all you have to do is put them on and gravity handles the rest. The dual pouch comfortably cradles you just like a hammock for the family jewels. And don't forget to check out our newest additions, the Bamboo 5 and the Mesh Boxer Brief. Added comfort, added performance, added mobility. You know what? I like to wear Sheath underwear at my roller hockey games. It keeps me cool for 3 periods of men's roller hockey on Wednesday night. It's a whole new world of comfort and performance. The Sheath underwear is all about supporting shows like ours and supporting free speech. So make sure to give Sheath underwear a try. Go to SheathUnderwear.com now and use the promo code VICTORY to receive 20% off today. That is very important. That's SheathUnderwear.com today and use the promo code VICTORY for 20% off.
So, hey, speaking of that, I got a quick story. So I did this movie, Two Tickets to Paradise, with our friend McGinley and Ed Harrison. Anyway,
you directed it, wrote it?
I directed it, wrote it, produced it, put the money up, lost my ass, the whole thing.
Of course.
But the soundtrack is unbelievable, right? Because it's a road trip movie. I wanted to have the 80s rock and roll soundtrack. So, anyway, so a friend of mine was friends with Bruce Springsteen's publicist. So he got me a Bruce Springsteen song super cheap.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, and then...
Which song is it?
When You're Alone. From Tunnel of Love, I think. So I had met Springsteen at this at Ted Field's house at a party, and I was like, it was like 30 people at the party. Everybody there was famous, and I was like, what? So I'm going to get run out of this room here, but I got to say hi to Springsteen before I do. So I'm thinking of what can I say to say hello, and then just to hit and run and get out of there, not try to shake hands or hug or anything like that. So I just I'm thinking about it. I'm like, okay, I come up my line. And then he opens up. I know somebody walks away, Bonnie Raitt or something. And I walk over and I go, hey, Bruce, one of the many, just want to thank you for the music. And turn to go. Like that was, I wasn't going to do any shit, right? And he goes, hey, you're the guy in the baseball movie. Wow. I was like, oh, there is a God.
As a matter of fact, I wasn't that baseball
and,
movie.
Well, John Sayles directed the video for Glory Days.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I didn't know that at the time. So anyway, so we talked for like 40 minutes.
Wow.
10 years later, people are looking over like, why is he talking to that idiot? You know, I'm more famous. And so 10 years later, I sent a letter and I said, hey, I'm doing this movie. It's about a guy from Pennsylvania. John McGinley's playing it. He's a New Jersey guy. And it's about your people. It's about your audience. And I wonder if you'd consider giving us a song. So he said yes. And and he said yes. And he forced Sony to take this ridiculously low license fee. So the movie, there's a scene, like a visual vocal with Dire Straits, one of my favorite bands of all time.
Love it.
Yeah. So it's, and we have to, the scene is like, the song after the good song is called Scrudge. Like I invented that word as if that's going to become something people say.
Right.
So the whole scene is about, you never put a good song on an album after a shitty, you never put a good song after a great song because nobody will ever remember it. So you put a song in there to fall on the grenade.
A shitty buffer.
Yeah.
So we had to call a Dire Straits song shitty, right? So it's an argument in the movie, but I need both songs because they're going to switch back. So Mark Knopfler, I asked him to do the score of the thing. I didn't know him, but I sent him a cold call, like, would you do the score? And he liked the script. And he was like, nah, no score, but you can have a song. And I said, I need two songs. I go, okay. And then I jammed him on the Springsteen Favored Nations price. And he agreed, right?
Wow.
So, but the record labels, they slow roll you because they're hoping it goes away. And so anyway, so I got to deliver the movie, and I don't have the rights from Mark Knopfler yet. So Paul Hipp, who was in the movie, he was friends with Malcolm McDowell, whose wife was best friends with Knopfler. Yeah. So really? We used all of this.
Entourage guy.
Interesting combo. Yeah.
So we get backstage at the Universal Amphitheater, his show and the whole thing. We're backstage and it's awesome. And I got the contracts with me. And so we talk for like 30 minutes and it's great. And so finally it's kind of wrapping up. And I say, hey, Mark, listen, I hate to do this, but do you mind signing these contracts? And the manager comes over and he's like, hey, we'll handle that later. And I was like, we've been handling that later for 6 months. We kind of need to do it now. And so Mark was like, well, I don't know. And I said, hey, listen, Mark, it's your brains or your signature on the contract. and it was kind of like funny and maybe not funny. And the security guys kind of move in a little bit. And then he signed
them. He finally laughed.
And then he signed them. We drank for another half hour. So
you pulled the contract out of your pocket. And like,
Whoever didn't get the line, because I said it before, that's the Godfather line. So, but did Mark Knopfler, who I love, did he laugh?
He's not a big guy. And it was McGinley's is bigger than
McGinley's
me.
McGinley's a big boy.
And Paul Hipp is kind of, so the three of us kind of looming. And the security guy. So it was like, it might have been real. I don't know.
Threatened Mark Knopfler. I hate to say it.
You muscled him. You brought in McGinley.
You know, with us, Stevie, so we get Matt Damon, we had Bono on early, you two on early. And then Matt Damon says, I want to bring Bono back for this scene with his charity. And Matt shoots his side of the phone call, which is on a computer, and Bono's on the other side of it. And Matt leaves, and I email Matt. I'm like, okay, so when's Bono ready to shoot? And he doesn't respond to me. And I'm like,
Jesus.
We had like less than 3 weeks to finish
the episode. It's like getting ready to air. You got to finish it.
Yeah. Getting ready to the episode. And I'm like, hello, Matt. Like, how do we get Bono? So I have an empty computer screen where Adrian was talking to Bono, I think. Like, Vince is talking to Bono.
Yeah,
there's no Bono.
Drama and Vince are talking to Bono, right?
So my buddy Will McDonough, who's fucking nuts, is like, I'm going to Ireland tomorrow to see you two. I'll get it done.
See, like, I would never think that could possibly happen. The story that DB just told him, what you're talking about, sounds
crazy. I'm literally like, thanks, Will. That's great.
He's good
like,
luck. Send, good
me,
luck in Ireland.
Send me the script, okay? I'm like, all right. I sent him the script. I wake up in the morning. I have this video, like, filmed nicely. Now they had, you know, Bono's people filmed it. So
sure,
it
he's got some guys.
Totally worked. But we have to use this for a social clip because no one directed him. No one told him what it is. And Bono is playing it like it's like some weird space movie. He's like, Vincent Chase, I need to talk to you. So I wake up at 7 a.m. I'm like, holy shit, Will McDonough got this done. And I look at this thing. I'm like, this is not usable. There's no way we could use it. So I text him. I go, Will, I need another take. I need to get on the phone with him. I need to tell him what to do. And he got it done. It was pretty wild.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, I mean, I would never.
I wish Will McDonough was my manager.
Will McDonough's a beast. He got Tom Brady for us also. So.
I mean, I just give bad advice to the Dylan with the Lincoln. If you said that to me, you're like, yo, I'm going to bring these contracts. I would say, buddy, do not pull those fucking contracts out backstage. It's going to be ridiculous. You're going to get laughed out.
Gutsy move.
Gutsy move.
I am like still stunned.
Because you can't sign it. I would be like, whoa, dude, I give you my word. I'm going to sign. I get it. I'll sign it in the morning. I cannot.
Yeah, but the guy, I mean, he's not going to sit there and read it, right?
Right,
I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, he could have signed anything.
Yeah.
It's a boilerplate. I mean,
and for people that, you know, that
DB took all of the licensing rights to
for every album.
For people that are listening that don't understand, getting music for movies, particularly from these big bands, is near impossible.
Yeah.
It's just not affordable.
No.
Right? So anytime you gotta
have guts.
You gotta have guts, or you gotta have a personal relationship.
You gotta probe.
Guts or a nice probe.
You gotta just probe them till they.
I love it.
A little reach around.
Both those stories are great, but we should. I don't know if we wait till the episode. We'll show that Bono stuff. It's absolutely amazing because it's funny as shit.
Okay, it's that time of year again. The holidays are here. I know it's stressful. A lot of presents to get. You want to be original. You don't want to be boring. You don't want to be bland. Uncommon Goods is your secret weapon. Uncommon Goods is here to make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on your list. Whether you're shopping for your secret Santa or your entire family, Uncommon Goods knows exactly what they want. So here's a few things. I was going through the website, a few things that I liked. You know, obviously I have an 18-month-old daughter and she's into the sensory thing. So right now she likes to put her hands in all kinds of things and she likes to, I'm getting her the exploding hand soap. I mean, it's great. They're like these bubbles. Kennedy will go in and squeeze them and boom, and it turns into soap. It's nice and safe. She washes her hands. So I like that, the exploding hand soap for Kennedy. But even the best part is for the love of my life, Zulai, I'm getting the desk chair wrap. She's always complaining how cold it is. So now she can sit in her office. She's working on Modern Muse. She sits in, she wraps herself up in this desk chair wrap. It's pretty cool. I know she's going to love it. She's super hard to buy for. So yeah, man, Uncommon Goods. You got to check it out. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/victory. That's uncommongoods.com/victory for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
All right, this has been great.
Yeah. You got the Mets hat on. You can't let us go without Irish night. Irish night.
Oh,
Shea,
yeah. This is funny.
Oh, boy. Just go out on this.
So it's Irish night at Shea, and they have like Irish bands. I think
I'm sure there were no fights that night.
Yeah. Oh, man. It was probably so many fights.
The hair in the back of my neck stood up. I said that. I'm like, oh, my God. It's
had bands
the
like
Jews
like
stayed home that
me
night.
Me getting
by
beat
way.
Up and having a bad hangover and getting beat up. That's how that night sounded.
Bands like the Dropkick Murphys or whatever.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, like blogging
before
the game. They had like a concert.
Just aggressive.
It was great.
Major aggression. So what?
Anyway, I'm over there with my buddy Magoo, and we're sitting in this beautiful suite. And we're watching the game, and I hear, hey, Dylan, you whip, you pussy. And I'm like, yeah, just ignore that. There's always drunks at these games. They just wouldn't let up. It was like, it went on and on and on. It's like, you suck, you. And I'm like, all right, that's enough. And I look over, and I look down, and who is it? Stevie with Billy Devlin.
Oh, my God. So for
yelling at me. I'm like, oh, get up here.
Yo, so for like the first half hour, you're like, just ignore him, whatever.
No, it wasn't that long. Whatever. But it was finally, good. Well, we were 30 seconds of them berating me, and I finally said,
Billy
who
is,
the hell is
no,
this?
No, we were having a food and beverage emergency, though, because it was Irish night, and so normally they turn off the beer in the seventh inning, but because Dropkick Murphys or whoever played before, everybody was lit. It was ballroom brawls in the fifth inning. They turned off the beer.
Early.
Is that true?
Absolutely. And so
now it's before the first for Irish
only
night.
Only Irish night. That
Irish
shut
night.
It down.
They shut it down.
So we had a great suite, and I was like, all right, come on up here. So I don't know how
when
you guys got up there, because you can't really just move up, like, you know.
We worked
was this.
Well, we got you into
what year
the
would you say
somehow.
This is? Like, 90s?
Man, that had to be
90s, right?
25, oh 28.
Do they still
years
have
ago?
Irish night? They can't even have
I don't
it.
Think they can get insurance.
that's like bat day at Yankee Stadium. And they used to give out bats, baseball bats. They don't do that
who was,
shit.
Who was behind that promotion? Like, I mean, how many people got clubbed at Yankee Stadium?
Oh, my God. It's like at Woodstock 99 when they gave out candles to everyone and they just burned the place
down. Did you
down.
Watch that doc?
The documentary's insane.
Did you see
three episodes.
No. Oh, it's nuts. It's on Netflix, I think. It's nuts.
It's called Woodstock 99, The Train Wreck, or something like
it's
that.
Just it's just sheer so mayhem, lawlessness, and it's like, you know, Lord of the Flies.
I'm sure you heard about 10 Cent Beer Night, because that happened. Didn't that happen at Comiskey?
Oh, yeah,
that
absolutely. At,
you
know,
yeah,
you yeah,
hear
yeah,
that
yeah,
story?
Yeah.
10 Cent Beer Night is a great story. YouTube that one, because I don't want to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
I heard about
story,
that.
But
yeah.
It's. Let's say 10 Cent Beer Night didn't go. It wasn't a great promotion. they didn't come back for
you
a
know,
year or two.
At the Comedy Store, when I used to do stand-up on Monday nights, they started doing no cover, two free drinks. Can you imagine, like, you're getting up amateur stand-ups in front of a bunch of fucking drunk lunatics who didn't pay their bar bill? And I walked down one. I used to wear, like, a leather jacket. And I came on, and, like, all these guys like, it's fucking Fonzie, you know? And like,
what do you think, you Dice Clay?
Exactly. So. Oh, boy. Anyway, well, DB, this is
Irish
great.
Night. My God.
Oh, that was fun.
I might have been an honorary Mets fan for that one.
Oh, yeah.
You might have switched over. Since you brought up both of them and all of these people have come in, did you see the people who were drafted in Major League Baseball after Russell Wilson? Did you see this list that I sent you the other day? Did you look? Aaron Judge was drafted after Russell Wilson.
Wow.
Jacob DeGrom was drafted after Russell Wilson.
Baseball's harder to gauge. It's not like basketball. Yeah.
Or maybe Russell would have been
or
great.
Or even hockey.
Yeah.
Maybe he should retire
he
football
probably
now
would have been.
And play.
You know, the one in hockey is Tom Glavine, the Hall of Fame pitcher for the Braves. He was drafted. He was drafted in the first round ahead of Brett Hull.
That's
no way.
Amazing. Yeah.
So Glavine probably could have been an all-star hockey player,
that's
too.
Great. I did not know that.
One of the great athletes.
That's kind of nuts. That's kind of nuts to think about, because Glavine, I don't know. I don't think of him like he would be a hockey player. He looks like just a precision pitcher. But
he was top.
Brett Hull, who we hang out with all the time at Chris Chelios' golf event. He's got the biggest hands you've ever seen, these big, meaty hands.
I saw his hands.
And his dad, too.
I don't know if he still listens to the podcast, but I saw his hands around Andrew Left one night at the Gaza Ranch. But they're friends, but it was fun. A couple of drinks.
Probing an anal
Oh, but those hands, forget those about it.
Davey, right. This was great.
Davey, you're the best. When you come back, we got to have you back.
I love it, man. It's so
done,
fun.
We could have done 2 hours here.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Really great to see you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Absolutely. And that wraps up another episode of Victory the Podcast. I'm Doug Ellen.
See ya.
Later.